From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is off this week. I'm Bob Garfield. Friday morning at 1:29, after 7 years of conflict and drama, at long last came the denouement. Arizona Senator John McCain, having returned to the Senate from brain surgery for the decisive votes on the repeal of Obamacare, shambled across the blue Senate carpet and literally turned his thumb down on so-called skinny repeal. The drama wasn't incidental. McCain planned it that way, telling inquiring reporters Thursday to wait for the show. And the scene was indeed like a season-ending episode of West Wing, because even in the minutes leading up to the vote, he was letting his Republican colleagues, including the vice president, petition him for support, although he'd already informed Democratic leadership of his intentions.
For an hour, McConnell comes in, goes out, various floor leaders doing the same. We can't tell what's happening, and I'm hoping you can.
They were talking. John McCain walked away and just sort of patted the vice president on his hand and walked away and left him standing there. And it was just interesting body language.
Yeah, he just kind of walked away, and the vice president was like, okay.
That Republicans are concerned. I mean, they are scurrying around. They're trying to figure out exactly how to handle this situation.
It was the apparent end, not only for the GOP's quixotic repeal ambitions, but very possibly McCain's legislative career. He must now return home to treat aggressive brain cancer and a prognosis that is not encouraging. If this is his final show, it was a McCain classic. After all, it was his vote on Tuesday that permitted the bill to come to the Senate floor in the first place.
I voted for the motion to proceed to allow debate to continue and amendments to be offered. I will not vote for this bill as it is today.
The turnabout, if that's what it was just the latest jagged detour on the route of McCain's Straight Talk Express. The Atlantic's James Fallows has ridden that bus for 35 years. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Bob, nice to talk to you.
I compared Friday morning to The West Wing, but it also had a kind of daytime soap opera vibe. Identical twins, exact opposites, all the time switching places, and you don't know which is which.
And of course, you're referring to the person of Senator McCain himself, who's had these different elements in his public career and his private persona for a very long time. And I'll say that I, as a person who has watched and admired the best parts of John McCain over the decades, and also as somebody, full disclosure, who thought this bill was being rushed through, I was personally glad to see things end up on this note and not where they had been 2 days before.
Okay, so if there are two John McCains, over the years, the press has paid very little attention to the twin brother who votes along straight party lines 90% of the time. We're institutionally infatuated with the one who every now and then breaks ranks, as he did Friday morning. How did this love affair begin?
I think there's a combination of factors here. One, of course, is John McCain's military and prisoner of war background, which anyone has to respect. Second, there have been a number of times in McCain's career when he's at least said things that were out of the norm for politicians and said them with some cost. I mean, for example, I'm thinking when during his 2008 campaign, when he was running hard against Barack Obama, and one of his questioners in some town hall said,
I have read about him, and he's an Arab.
And McCain somewhat inartfully said,
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with.
Defending Obama at a time when he was not being defended. He's known to be a loyal, mensch-like personal friend to other people in public life. There was a famous story that Michael Lewis did, you know, decades ago about how when Morris Udall, once a great liberal champion in the Congress, was really disabled by Parkinson's disease and nobody even remembered anymore, the only person who came to visit him was his ideological rival but personal friend John McCain. And there is that side to him.
Now, Jim, because you are personally so, old.
A mature observer of the Washington scene.
I think that's what I meant to say. You've known him since the 80s when you were in the Carter White House. Tell me about your impression of him at the time.
During the Vietnam War and afterward, I was very much in the anti-war movement and was not for that Vietnam War then or now. And what struck me about John McCain's entry on the scene as a Arizona politician and war hero in the early 80s is how much he wanted to find ways to reconcile these split feelings within the United States, pro and con of the Vietnam War, and between Vietnam and the United States. And that was, again, something I think genuine for him. There was nothing he really had to gain for that. There were a lot of other people who were in the veteran community and also in the anti-war community who were quite hard-edged and thought, no, these other people in today's tribal sense. But McCain was not that way. And I think that is something that had a kind of magic in politics then. Maybe this was somebody who could reconcile people in the way other great American leaders have done.
One, I think, nakedly hypocritical aspect of McCain's political life was his relationship with the religious right. He famously excoriated the likes of Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell for having undue influence on parts of the electorate and warned the rest of the Republican Party, and I think he was pointing mainly at George W. Bush, not to pander to the outer reaches of American politics.
Right. I think that John McCain's anger at extremism, and especially religious extremism, back in 2000 was well earned because famously in the South Carolina primary in 2000, when he was still a serious contender against George W. Bush, the Bush campaign used a lot of really nasty rile up the evangelical base attacks on McCain that he was properly furious about. And so if he was complaining about it at the time, that was a legitimate complaint. But when McCain had to rev up his campaign 8 years later to run eventually against Barack Obama, he, like other petitioners in the GOP field, felt he had to court these people too.
But in a kind of classic McCain fashion, he doubles back and once again manages to seduce the media.
Senator! What's going on?
By sort of becoming the butt of the joke. Here he is with John Stewart in 2006.
I heard this crazy story that Senator John McCain is giving the commencement address at Jerry Falwell's University.
Well, before I bring on my two attorneys, I'd like to...
Don't make me love you.
Don't make me love you. And yet he did. He has such a string of conquests over the media.
It's true. And you know the famous Hollywood line, if you can fake authenticity, you've got it made. There's something similar in politics. If you can fake self-deprecation, you've got it made. I think the press is more of a sucker for that than for anything else. And so if you can seem to be self-aware, if you can seem to understand the preposterousness of what you're doing, which Obama did in a different way too, parallel point, this is not Donald Trump's strongest suit, but if you can seem to be self-aware, you can go a long way, and McCain has done that.
Well, on the subject of that sort of cynicism, and for the race against Barack Obama in 2008, there was one other kind of jaw-dropping McCain political decision that, you know, still kind of makes my head spin, and that is Sarah Palin as his vice presidential running mate.
This was the roll the dice, reckless, just being another desperate politician side of John McCain that I think will be the main anchor around his reputation in a bad sense of saying, this is the guy who did that and brought Sarah Palin conceivably within commander-in-chief range.
Yeah, but just as you're about to sort of dismiss him as another politician with a ready smile and a shoeshine, he'll do something that he absolutely doesn't have to do. For example, there was an appearance on Fox and Friends in 2013.
Well, listen to this video, Senator McCain, of a Syrian, it looks like a fighter jet being shot out of the sky. Listen to what they say afterwards. Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! I have a problem helping those people out if they're screaming that after a hit.
Would you have a problem with American and Christians saying, thank God, thank God? That's what they're saying. Come on. Of course they are Muslim.
John McCain, don't make me love
you.
Okay, so comes the Senate showdown Friday morning, and McCain goes thumbs down. Was this, do you think, about the bill? Was it about payback to Donald Trump, who during the campaign had questioned McCain's war heroism? Was it about open government and the end of Mitch McConnell's opacity? Or was it about McCain's legacy, not wishing to be seen in the end as two-faced, but to have Maverick in the history books and in the lead of every obituary?
I assume there are elements of every part of what you've just described in his decision. You know, he cannot view Donald Trump with anything other than disdain, given Trump's own public contempt for him on the campaign trail. He's not been that close a friend of Mitch McConnell, who he seemed visibly to spurn during the late night voting. And he must also recognize, for all of his jauntiness over the years, that he's not going to have that many more chances to make a big public decision. And I think the fact that Senator Hirono from Hawaii came in to speak passionately about what she was doing as a cancer patient and surviving this bill, his memory of Ted Kennedy, his close friend who, after his diagnosis with brain cancer, came to vote for the original Obamacare bill, his knowledge of Claire Engel, the senator from California, who back in the 1960s came in from almost terminal brain cancer to vote to end a filibuster against the civil rights bill. I think John McCain must have sensed this is a chance to, if not end, at least to have this stage of his career be on a way he would like to be remembered and not the other.
In your view, is this redemption?
It is a good thing for him to have done. After, it must be noted, Senator Murkowski of Alaska and Senator Collins of Maine made his vote the decisive one by their standing with the bill, and of course the other 48 Democrats and independents who said they weren't going to rush this through. And if this ends up to be the last major decision or choice he makes in his long public career, I think everybody who has admired the best in John McCain will be glad to see him making this choice.
Jim, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
James Fallows is a national correspondent for The Atlantic. His article on Senator John McCain is titled, John McCain Makes His Choice. Coming up, if you can't repeal Obamacare...
Boy, oh boy. They've been working on that one for 7 years. Can you believe that?
How about using taxpayer money to destroy it?
You know, I said from the beginning, let Obamacare implode.
This is On the Media.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.